This is Joe Basso with Music Radar, the place for music makers, and I'm speaking with Brent Hines from Mastodon. Brent, how you doing?
I'm doing good.
Fantastic, man. Mastodon's new record is called Crack the Sky, and as is the case with all of the band's records, it's quite the opus.
Yeah, you know, we try.
Yeah, you try, all right, man, and succeed. Quite an experience. How you feeling with this record?
I love it. I think it's fun. It's a cosmic. I really like it. You know, it's funner to play and listen to than all of our other albums, I think.
Why do you think?
Probably because I wrote most of the music, and it just easier for me to play music that I wrote. That way, I don't have to worry about remembering something that someone else wrote. That's probably why it's funner for me. And I get to sing a lot on it, and I don't have to scream, so it's funner for me to sing and not scream. It really hurts my throat when I scream. When I sing, it's fun. It feels better.
I do notice that, as opposed to previous records, yes, you are singing more, and there is more elaborate vocal harmonies. Was that by design? Was that from working with Brendan O'Brien? What brought
that
about?
Yeah, we never tried it before, you know? We never even knew that we were capable of doing vocal harmonies. And then Brendan was like, well, right here, just why don't one of you guys try this with your voice and it'll harmonize? And we were like, oh, that's fucking cool, man. That sounds neat. Yeah, let's do that.
Now, have you been rehearsing live? I mean, how's that going to go down on stage?
Oh, yeah. I'm putting on my pants right now, heading out the door in the pouring down rain here in Atlanta, Georgia, on my way to my practice pad to meet the guys and go over the new album. We're getting ready for our tour starting April 9th in Birmingham, Alabama. That's where I'm from, so all my family's going to be there, so we have to be extra awesome on that day. So I'm going down to the practice pad every day, trying to get it together so it would be super awesome. I mean, it's already coming together really good. It's just that we kind of tend to over-practice, you know? I mean, we don't really have day jobs anymore because of the band, so we just pretty much just go down there and practice, even though if we need to or not, you know?
What was your day job before the band?
I was a carpenter. I was framed houses.
Oh.
Remodeled houses. It's pretty much the only job for scumbags around in this town.
I'm sure being in Mastodon sure beats that.
Oh, yeah, of course. I mean, I was in Mastodon while I was framing houses also, of course. And, you know, I never really knew how challenging it was until now. Like, looking back in the day, I used to get up real early and go frame houses all day long and then go meet the guys, band practice, have band practice until, like, you know, 1 or 2 in the morning, and then go and do that for, you know, do that for several months on end. And then we'd go on tour. And then when we went on tour, it was like vacation, you know. So I think that's why I still like going on tour. I just look at it like a big vacation. You know, we get to play one show every night. And then, you know, it's pretty low-key, you know, as long as you can get the interviewers, to keep the interviewers at bay. And then, no offense, but I'm just saying, you know, understand, like, the only kind of thing that's kind of like a bum out on tours, like, man, you got to talk to this dude at 2 o'clock, and it's like, man, I only went to sleep at 6, and I'm still asleep, you know, so I'll do, like, interviews in my bunk, like, half asleep, where, you know, it's definitely, it beats the hell out of framing houses, and every time I have to do something, like, yesterday I had to wake up kind of early and go meet the guys for lunch for, like noon. And I can meet some Warner Brothers people. And it was April Fool's Day, April 1st. So I went all the way down there. You know, I didn't want to go down there, but I got my lazy ass up out of bed, took a shower, put my clothes on, went all the way down there. And the meeting had been canceled, and I didn't get any memo about it or anything. And I was like, that's the best April Fool's joke anyone's ever played on me. But other than that, yeah, it kicks the shit out of building houses.
And you were looking forward to
living.
And you were looking forward to a free lunch, and then that got all blown.
Yeah, man, I was really looking forward to some good, you know, some lunch downtown. I don't know, maybe a restaurant I've never been to or something. They'll make it up to me.
They'll make it up to you, I'm sure. Well, before we get back into the record, I have to ask, you've come back from a pretty heavy experience at the MTV Awards several years ago. You were beaten up pretty badly. What happened there? What were the circumstances?
I was like I was having like a drinking contest, kind of like with Dave Grohl, and we were like turning up the Crown Royal bottle, and we were in one, and then Dave would turn up the Crown Royal bottle, and I would try to count to 15 to see if he could, you know, last 15 seconds chugging on whiskey. And then I would do it, and then back and forth. And we would, you know, I don't think any of us ever made it to 15, but we just got, basically, I just got shit-faced with a bunch of my friends.
Okay.
And then I was on top of the world, and I just played with the Foo Fighters, and I was in a really good mood. And we were at the Mandalay Bay, and we all jumped in the fucking pool. You're not supposed to do that. And then so, like, running from the security people, running through the Mandalay Bay, like, with my shirt off, like, swinging it around my head, and accidentally popped this guy with my shirt. And then, and that's how, and it wasn't Shavo Adashian, it was his friend, William Burke. And I accidentally popped him with my wet shirt, and he did not like that at all. So he tried to end my life over it.
Oh, boy. And you got you got pretty effed up, huh?
Yeah, I was totally messed up. I was down for a while, about 8-9 months. Just totally, where am I? What's going on?
But you're okay now. Everything's all right.
Yeah, I'm all good now.
It made me
have a better lust for life and appreciate my life more, you know, and made me want to play guitar better and more, and made me just want to create more music. Is pretty much all it really did to me.
You and I spoke several years ago when you did Blood Mountain, and you were pretty honest about creating that record, that smoking weed was a pretty big part of the creative process.
Yeah, I mean, that's the same way this album came out of me, too, just sitting on my couch getting high, you know, playing acoustic guitar.
That was going to
happen. And you're sitting around in a comfy pair of flannel house pants, you know? But that's pretty much the way I write all our albums or anything I write for the band. I usually end up writing, like, you know, sitting around in sweatpants and, like, you know, not really, some kind of like subconscious streaming, like, you know, like, a, you know, uncolor, and you know, no, you're not really aware that you're creating anything. You're just kind of doodling around and then savoring ideas, and oh, I like what that sounded, and I don't think I'll keep that. What you looking for, Sarah?
So what I'm getting at is the near death experience you had didn't stop your weed intake.
No, unfortunately not. Unfortunately, nothing can stop me from smoking weed and drinking beer. I wish something could. It definitely quit me. You know, I didn't smoke weed for several months after the incident, or drink any alcohol for several months after the incident, you know?
Yeah.
But that was doctor's orders. But then as soon as I felt like I could handle some beer and some weed, you know, I took it upon myself to roll one up and pop a top again. But, you know, I mean, I definitely did. The whole thing did slow me down a little bit. I don't get as fucked up as I used to. I'm kind of enjoying water and tea nowadays. You know, it's kind of rare. I usually would just drink strictly beer, like, all the time. But now I like to drink tea when I wake up and not beer. And I like to, you know, I drink water during band practice, you know. Yesterday we had a celebration in band practice and we all drank beer, but, like, you know, because Bill had a problem too with
yes,
pretty much, you know. So we're all trying to realize that we're not superhuman. It's hard to realize you're not superhuman when everything's going your way and the band's really doing really well and all the shows are sold out and you're kicking ass all over the world. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. Now let me ask you. I am fascinated by the fact, I mean, because your songs are so complex and so complex guitar-wise that you compose on an acoustic.
Yeah, man, it's really simple. Like, you know, the acoustics, just like any other guitar, it has, 22 scale fret and 6 strings going across it. It's just like playing electric guitar. It's just...
No, but playing an acoustic is harder in some aspects than playing an electric. You know, you have to really dig down and fret, whereas playing an electric with, you know, lighter gauge strings, you know, your fingers can fly more.
Well, I mean, my acoustic is a Martin D15, and it plays really well. You don't really have to, there's no more effort taken to play that guitar than there is playing any of my electric guitars, because when I play electric guitar now, I play a 12-string electric guitar.
Right.
So that's harder to play than my acoustic, but I just like the way it sounds. And, you know, I think it's actually, for me, it's easier to create on the acoustic guitar than the electric guitar. Sometimes I'll come up with my heavier riffs on the electric guitar, you know, just standing around the practice pad waiting on somebody to get done peeing or whatever. But, you know, to me, it's really not harder. I think I would say that it's easier.
When you write songs, how do you demo them? Do you have a home system? Do you work on GarageBand, Logic, anything like that?
If I can't remember what I wrote, then it's not worth remembering. So that's how I demo my songs. I don't record them at all. I don't GarageBand them or what they call that other thing, Pro Tool them. I just remember them, and then I go to the practice pad and I show the rest of my bandmates what I've written, and then we all just kind of start learning what I've written. You know what I mean? Some other guys in the band that do what's it called, Pro Tool their songs. Like Bill, he'll write something and have it all Pro Tooled together. Like, here's my song I wrote on a CD. You know?
Right.
But I'll just be like with my, you know, with my hands. Like, here's the song I wrote, and I'll show you on guitar. I don't really know how to. I'm kind of computer retarded, so.
But
Bill's a little bit more savvy.
But I'm astounded. I mean, with how long and how complex your songs are. I mean, you don't even put them on a cassette.
I don't know when to stop. I just don't know when to stop. My songs were longer and more complex than any song on the album, but they all got edited down to what they are there, because I just don't know when to quit. I just like to keep writing and writing and writing until I have too much material. That way, you know, can whittle it down and make it really awesome.